Here's another inspiring speech recorded at Communities in Control, Australia's biggest and best annual community sector gathering.
Thank you and thank you for the opportunity to come along and be part of today. To Carol and Anne and Joan, wonderful women and great people of encouragement, and I thank them for asking me along today and allowing me to share some of the learnings from the Bushfire Authority and I guess from my life in policing. Can I pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people, and to any elders who are here and those who have passed. Can I also thank the organisers and the sponsors of this kind of a conference to see all of you here. And when they said there was 1,000 of you, I was really surprised. But I was impressed because it says an enormous amount about our community. And I think it also confirms what I've seen in our communities over the last 16 months and the 8 years before that when I was police commissioner. I want to talk in about two different parts, if that's okay. The first is to talk about the bushfires and to talk about the kind of things I've seen in communities. And this address was around community leadership. And I really want to emphasise the community piece. And I know that many of you have far more experience than me in this process and have worked with many, many, many communities. But I wanted to share with you what I've seen about community leadership, because I think it's just a fabulous thing to see and been enormously encouraging for me to see and to see the results of what those communities can do when we support them to achieve what they want to achieve. As you all know, the bushfires have an enormous devastating effect on Victoria and I think across the whole country and in fact many parts of the world, people understood the impact that it had. On the 173 people that we lost, who were mums and dads and sisters and brothers and children and grandmothers and all of those that people lost in those fires. We lost homes, 2,133, and we lost 1,500 more. Homes were damaged and many, many facilities and 109 communities were actually affected by those fires. And I think somewhere in the vicinity of about 60,000 people were directly affected. I think all of us were affected, but directly affected as well. And so what I've seen in working with those communities from the very beginning, from the day after when I first went and started to talk with those communities till last night when I was up at a place called Christmas Hills that some of you might know, but a place too that was touched by the fires and talking to a community group of about 30 about what that group wanted to do. From the very beginning, what we wanted to do within the authority was to work with communities, to actually ensure that we had a community-led recovery. And those of you who have ever read literature about disasters and about recovering is having communities as part of that recovery, having them take the leadership has turned out, I think, to be the best way that communities recover. And one, I wanted to tell you some stories about some of those communities. And one community is a little community called Hazelwood Gerilang. Some of you may know it, but it's a small community up in Gippsland, up in the mountains. And it was a community that one of the people who became the chair of the Community Recovery Committee said, we didn't even actually know we were a community until someone told us. He said, we didn't even talk to each other. We didn't even really nod when we passed each other as we drove by. And it was houses quite isolated, obviously in the middle of the bush. They had one community asset, and it was a hall. And it was built in I think, 1939 after a fire that had been in that area. And so that one community asset became really a significant part. It was partly burned, but it became the centre of that group coming together. And they were very clear. A man called Tony Ferguson was elected as the chair of their Community Recovery Committee. And Tony was a person who was very direct, had a fairly senior position in his business, but was very direct and said, Christine, I think there's five things we want you to do for us. And I went, okay, fine. And so we worked with them on those five things. And when the fifth thing was done, Tony sent me a letter and said, thank you, we're done now. And he said, we're going to have a meeting next week and we'd really like you to come because we want to just tell you about something. And he wanted, obviously, to thank us for the work we'd done and the way that his community had been able to come together as a community but achieve many things. He said, now, Christine, we're going to take the R out of the Community Recovery Committee. We're just going to be a community committee. And we're going to go on, he said, because we've learned an enormous amount about how to get things done and we're not about to lose those skills. And he's just one example of the 33 committees that we've worked with. And so the part of it was letting communities lead. Now, I know that many of you believe that, but let me tell you, I've seen it, and I've seen it in the most difficult circumstances when people have been traumatised and lost family and lost homes. But those people, in those circumstances, tell us how to do things and tell us how to lead. I think other lessons that we've learned through this whole process is that communities are different. I know I'm not telling you anything about that, but they very much are different. And some of the things you should think about when you're working with communities, as we've had to along the way, is that there are no what you'd call sort of normal communities. All the communities that we've dealt with are very different. And they're different in different sorts of ways. I remember being in the very early days in King Lake, and it was a community meeting in a tent, because there were no halls or places really that you could take 700 people to a community meeting. And we'd asked to come along to this meeting. It was a community meeting, they were holding themselves. They weren't really sure whether I should be allowed to come because they wanted to think and talk amongst themselves. And I said, it's okay, I'd like to come, and besides that, I've got some money. So they let me come. And we just wanted to talk and explain some of the things we were trying to do, but mostly we wanted to listen. And they were quite an interesting group, and they didn't all agree. And I know that you know that better than me, that communities don't all agree, and they will have their say. And this went on for some time. And it was cold outside, and people were getting a bit unhappy, and different people would yell at each other. And I was sitting, thank heavens, and thinking that I'm glad I used to be the police commissioner. And we watched what happened for a while. And eventually I watched a process that I watched in many other communities, and that is they argued it through until they came to a place where eventually, way up the back of the room, a woman got up and said, now let me just get this straight. What we're talking about is this and this and this. And everybody went, yep. And she said, I think we can go home now. And they did. And what I learned in that process was it's okay for people to argue. It's okay for people to have a different opinion. And if you let the group work their way through that, what I found in so many instances in incredibly emotional times is they worked their way through it. Now, that group of people had an election for their Community Recovery Committee, and they went to the Australian Electoral Commission to run it, which was amazing. But they did, and they came with a group, and that group is the most diverse range of people I've ever seen. It has a very strong community activist about sustainability. It has a Buddhist nun. It has a woman who's never had a leadership position in her life before but decided she was going to stand up and actually be part of that community and help them recover. It has a management consultant who has a lot of skills. So I think what I've seen is diverse communities. I've seen communities too that we shouldn't forget about their histories. None of us come personally without a history, and none of those communities come without histories either. And you need to think about what those histories were. So if you take a place like Marysville, that has a long history, and those histories in some ways become part of the future and become part of the ways communities want things done. But they're important. We've had a great advisor during the whole time in the bushfires, and his name is Dr. Rob Gordon, who's a world's expert on recovery. And he said to us a while ago, Christine, you need to acknowledge the communities, the groups within the communities. You need to acknowledge their identity. It's a very important part of giving legitimacy to people. And we've understood that. We've also seen other communities where they describe themselves as the black belt part of the community, the part that was burnt, and the green belt part of the community, the part wasn't. And I was a little unhappy about that kind of a way to describe it, but it is the way they are and the way they will see themselves. And I think that part of the way we work with communities we've learned is to listen and accept that difference, which is a pretty important part of the process. I think also what I've learned from communities is they won't take no anymore. And I think that's fantastic. And they've understood in many ways how to get things done. There's a great little community called Strath's Creek, and they now get the language. They now know how to put a bid in for funding. They know how to scope a project. They know how to get legitimacy for that project. They know all the language, and they're never going back to where they were before. And I think that's important, that communities get that power, get that knowledge, and know how to get things done. I think we've seen little communities, and one that I was up at a community up in the northeast in the Alpine area, and they have just one hall. It's a pretty old hall, and it's full of asbestos. And around the area, they had the fire. And they said, do you think, Christine, it's possible for us to, that maybe the Red Cross Fund or maybe someone else might be able to help us just fix that hall up? It's the only thing that we have. And we're able to go back and say to them, yep, we've taken your bid, we've gone forward with it. And it was the greatest thing that you've ever seen. And they invited me for lunch, the whole 50 people who live in the community. And it was a great experience to see that community that had struggled and didn't realise that it would be able to make that and be able to achieve. I think I've also learned about communications, about talking to people from the very beginning. Just using King Lake again, in the very, very beginning, 600 people would come at lunchtime to the CFA station to understand what had gone on. You can't over-communicate. It's a very important part that you're there. And it's also important for someone like me, I think, in the role that I had and have within the Bushfire Authority, is also to say to people, it'll be okay. We will get there. We will be able to achieve these kind of things that you want to achieve. And then to see people become part of delivering on that process. Those daily communications were really important. They need to be respectful, they need to be honest, and they need to be informing people about where things are up to as their whole lives are falling about them. It needs to be local communications, it needs to be empowering. Flowerdale Community has a community blog. And Flowerdale is a wonderful community, incredibly diverse, a range of people who I'm sure never wanted to be found by most of us before in some cases, and are very unhappy that they now have been found. But they are a great community and they have a blog that anybody can be part of and but gets information. There's a newsletter called The Bridge Connection in a place called Mia Mia and Reesdale up out of Bendigo. And they have a newsletter that used to be small, has now got a distribution of 800 newsletters. And I went to the unveiling of the most wonderful asset that that community could ever have, and it was a photocopier. And we did unveil it. And they were all there. And they just thought it was a wonderful thing. It's a very expensive photocopier, I have to tell you. But I was delighted to go to one of the kind of converted garages that someone who'd lost their house had actually built, and this is now where this new Bridge Connection newsletter was being published from. The King Lake Rangers Radio, and a lovely woman called Kath Stewart, who just never let up in saying that King Lake needed a radio station. There's also one in Marysville, and there are others that are in the process of being delivered. But those radio stations are really important, and they were able to be funded along the way. Websites, and our community websites set up for many of the communities along the way. I think they're the kind of things that I've watched with our community. I've watched enormous courage from so many people who've done so much. I was telling some people earlier about the kinds of people you meet. And I remember there was one group of people, some women came to us and said to us, we'd like to have a workshop. We'd like a retreat for women who've been affected by the fires. And I said, well, how many did you have in mind? And they said, oh, about 600 women. And I said, have you ever run that kind of an occasion for 600 women? And they said, no, but with you, we think we can. And in fact, they did. And 300 women came to the first at Lawn, and 300 women came to the second at Lawn. And it was the most emotional and amazing experience to watch that group of women come together and support each other. And it was a wonderful thing to see about how they were able to do that. Again, I've told a number of people before, but I was sitting talking to a woman, and she was just delighted to be there. And I said, well, this is, you know, a wonderful weekend. And she said, yes, I'm looking forward to lots of things. The chocolate therapy, she thought, would be great. And yoga and a whole lot of other things. And she said, but you know what the most important part is, Christine? And I said, what's that? She said, I don't have to wash up. And, you know, I thought that was pretty important. And so I guess there's some of the things I've learned from the community, from the bushfire community. And I've also learned other things. And I've learned it from the police. I've learned it from the time that, You know, back when I first got involved as a young police officer, back in the 70s, and as Anne was talking about books she's written and things I've read, they're very much part of me and part of where I started off. But one of the early lessons I learned was about trust. And it was about trusting people, and I think about a respectfulness for people as well. Anne's book reminded me of Damned Whores and God's Police. When I used to work at Darlinghurst Police Station, they used to arrest 80 prostitutes a night. And I got to know most of them. And I got to understand where those women came from. And I got to understand, in a sense, in a real way, the kind of difference that we had in our community. But I also got to understand that a respectfulness in the way you treated people, no matter who they were, unless they lose your respect, was an important part. And I think the trust part is important too. You do have to trust communities. You have to trust the people who work with you. And for a vast amount of the time, that trust will be rewarded. And people have said to me recently, you know, what about the trust you put in people? I haven't lost that trust. And I think we should know that our communities can be trusted, that they are able to make decisions, that they're really pretty smart, and sometimes we forget that. Communities, as I said, are different, and the respectfulness and the respect is important. I think there's another part of respect as well, and that's probably about a respect for you, for about what you do and about the way you go about your role. Again, my time at Darlinghurst was, I did some things that weren't terrible, but they were, I think, personally damaging to me in some of the behaviours, and this was just one, but I found myself at a pub at 6 a.m. in the morning drinking beer, and I don't even like beer. Yeah. Given I'm on the Foster's board, it's interesting, but there it is. But I was drinking beer because I wanted to fit in. I just wanted to be like the blokes. And this is back when I was 22. I wanted to just be like the blokes and behave like the blokes. And I remember just thinking, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be like people that I don't really want to be like them at all. I don't want to have to do things to fit in. And I think that's a really important thing for us to think about. So I said to the blokes, I'm not doing this anymore. And they said, fine, big deal. And I, okay, fine. But I started at that stage, and I was really pretty lucky to say I wasn't going to do things that in any way damaged me. And I think it's an important part for us and for communities as well to think about that respectfulness for yourself. I think I also learned about listening and just listening to what people have got to say. And I often said when we were trying to reform Victoria Police, and I think we did a pretty good job actually in many ways, is to say that, Christine, what you should do is shut up and listen. And it was the best thing I ever did, was to ask the people in the organisation, ask the community what they wanted done, and then work to have that achieved. We had a visit from a professor, Ed Blakely, during the bushfire recovery early times. And he said to me, you know, one of the things that governments need to do is to listen to the communities about what they've got to say. He said, in New Orleans in the early days, the government said we should restore essential services, we should get the police stations back and the fire stations, when in fact what the communities wanted was somewhere for the kids to play. So we should listen to what the community's got to say about what's important to them, and I've learned that. I think there is the issue around being honest about what you can do and what you can't do, and I've had to do that. I remember a man came up to you in a meeting and he said, Christine, I've lost $3 million worth of a business and I have no insurance. I said to him, I'm sorry to say to you, I can't give your business back to you, but you've got the one major asset that created that business, and he is standing in front of me. You've got you. And you're the one who can go back and try and work through how to go forward. And he said, I don't like that advice. Well, it's the best I'm going to give you. I suppose in some ways I've learned to be far more pragmatic about people having to think about what they're doing. I suppose the other things I've learned in life and in lots of different ways is about courage and about commitment. You do have to have some courage, you know. I watched Anne and Joan, and I've watched many, many of you that I know who are here, who've stood up and said things that people didn't want to hear. You do actually have to have some courage on occasions. And it may mean that you're under the spotlight, and I'm not used to the spotlight much. But there it is. And if your heart tells you it's the right thing to do, if your beliefs tell you it's the right things to do, then I'd tell you to do it and to have the courage to be able to see it through. A commitment, that resilience to stay and to continue, I think is a really important part. I think you also have to have a belief that something's possible. People said to me, you can never reform Victoria Police. but I knew it was possible because the members of that organisation and the community wanted it to be possible. And I think they're important parts. Our communities that have been damaged by the fires have a belief that they can't get back to where they were, but they call it the new normal. Those who lost family members are struggling to get back to that point about what they see is their new normal. And I think that's an important part as well, a belief that you think it's possible. I want to finish, and then I'm happy to answer questions on a couple of issues. One's about an event I went to a while ago, and it was the FINA World Swimming Championships. And it was held at the Rod Laver Arena, and you might remember they made it a swimming pool. And I remember going along to this event, and we'd done the security for that, and Victoria Police was very happy about that security we'd done, and everything was in place. And they invited us along to the opening. And I remember sitting there with a lot of other people at the opening, and the process was that each country was introduced, and they would bring in their flags, and they'd play the music of the country. And then they had each of the swimmers who were there would have a float, with a big float, with a flag of their country on board. And the flag was sort of attached, and they'd come over to the pool and put the float into the pool. Well, this sort of went on and on and on and on. There was a lot of countries there. And I remember watching the floats in the pool. And the floats in the pool kind of did what floats do. And you know what that is? They bob about. You know, they just kind of bobbed about. The floats went from one end of the pool and they floated back, and sometimes they gathered together, but they basically no real direction at all. Just floated about. And that's what floats do. And I remember thinking, yes, that's interesting, they're floats. And then they'd asked us to come back the following day, and we watched people get on the edge of that pool, same pool of course, and they did the very, very best they could do to win their races, to achieve medals, to do whatever it was. But they had goals. They weren't floats bobbing about in the pool. They had a go. And I think the most important part I've learned about big organisations and about communities and about people is that you can actually float, just go with the tide. Or you can get out of the pool, you can get the knowledge and practice, and you can get on the edge and you can have a go. Doesn't mean you're always going to win. In fact, you're going to stuff it up on occasions. But because you've had a go is the most important part. And I suppose what I've learned in life, and I've had great parents to help me with that in many ways. I have a mum who says, if all else fails, come home, Christine. And I have a dad who sends me emails recently about a whole range of issues. But my point is, I think that it's really important to have a go. And that's what most of you have done in your communities, to have a go. Not always going to work out. That's okay. You know, you win some and you lose some. And as my mum has this wonderful line, she says to me, you got yourself into it, get yourself out of it. And I feel like pulling the sheets over my head. You know, you have too much to give, all of you. You've got so much knowledge and so much skills, and these 2 days that you've been part of have given you additional skills and great capacity to continue to beyond, to lead our communities to the place that those communities want to go. Thank you for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed this highlight from the Communities in Control Library. If you did, we'd love you to rate or review this podcast in the iTunes Store and for you to share it with your friends. For further information about Communities in Control, visit communitiesincontrol.com.au.